Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, rbnrepublicbroadcasting.org. It's the family feud of free speech, because I was in the hills of Tennessee, and that's where the Hatfields and the McGillicuddies had, were they in Kentucky? I can't remember, but I was there too. And so go there. Because that's what we are. We're like a family feud, and sometimes we start shouting at each other and shooting each other. Not literally, just figuratively. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Well, today is a bank holiday in the United States. It is Labor Day, and RBN is shut down. So you will be hearing this on tomorrow, which is Tuesday, but we still have Mark Collett with us. Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Patrick. It's good to be here. Good to start my week with you, as always. And, yeah, it's the beginning of another week of, what can we say, the news cycle, so to speak. And obviously, we have moved on past the anti-migrant protests or riots, however you want to frame it here in the UK. But interestingly, on the back of the disorder that took place, and I'm not going to claim there was no disorder at all or anything like that, because that would make me look very foolish and silly, because obviously there was some disorder at those anti-migrant protests, and to say otherwise just makes you look a bit of a fool, doesn't it? But interestingly, something that I find quite interesting is the other week it was the Notting Hill Carnival here in the UK. Now, the Notting Hill Carnival is a multicultural event. It's an event that is celebrated by the system, by the media, by the establishment, by politicians. This is, you know, a flagship multicultural event that takes place every year here in the UK. And this year, there was 350 arrests. Two people were killed. Mm. Multiple people were stabbed. There was probably countless sexual assaults.
I just want to contrast that very briefly with the anti-migrant commotion, in which during the commotion, nobody was stabbed and nobody was killed, but 1,000 people were arrested.
Hmm. Well, exactly. And this is the big thing. I think this is something which gives people a little bit of a window into the way those running the system think, the way they behave, the way they look at the world. Because when you, generally speaking, there tends to be, I think you could call it, a scale on which crimes exist. And I'm not saying this because I want to get into a protracted conversation over it, or debate over where crime should be on this scale. But I think it's fair to say, at the very top of the scale of crimes, sort of generally what's seen as sort of the worst crime, is murder. So when you look at criminality, if you said to the average person, what do you think would be the worst crime somebody could commit? I think straight away they would say, well, the worst crime is murder. And you'd go down from there. And I think the next one they would say, well, you know, the next would broadly be sex offences, with sex offences against children being the worst of the sex offences. And then as you go down the scale, you get less and less and less. And finally, you know, you would end up at things sort of shouting at people, which is arguably not a crime. You know,
well, how about shouting at dogs?
Dogs, waving flags.
Wasn't there a woman arrested at the anti-migrant riots for shouting at the police dog?
I think it was a man. I think he's been sentenced to time in prison. But yes, there absolutely was. I think it's a gentleman who is actually being jailed now for that very crime. And when we say crime, we're doing those little inverted commas things people do, you know, the air quotes, as people call them. And that's really where we are. You know, that's where we are. We're in a position where fundamentally we are seeing, you know, normal people being dragged out of their homes, often in dawn raids, you know, actual dawn raids, and, you know, basically off you go straight, you know, effectively straight to jail, because, you know, amazingly, and I do find this quite amazing, these people are remanded in custody immediately. So here in the UK, there's a couple of things that can happen to you when you're arrested. When you're arrested, you're usually held for a short while, then you're interviewed. The interview comes quicker if you decline assistance from a legal professional, if you ask for a solicitor to be present. Obviously, if you're asking for a solicitor to be present, then it takes a little longer. Once you're interviewed, you are usually at that point released after you've been interviewed, unless it's a serious crime. Now, if it's a serious crime, something like murder, or something where you would face normally a custodial sentence, there's a huge amount of evidence against you, and you could pose a threat to the public, then you are what is known as remanded in custody. Now, that means you go straight to jail awaiting your trial. So if you walked into a bar and you opened fire on people because you were, you know, partaking in some sort of gangland feud, and four people were shot, two of them died, one of them sustained life-changing injury. Person is either a very, very high flight risk or a significant threat to the public. So, you know, if somebody has a good case of it would be somebody who's like a prolific rapist, or there was a famous rapist by the name of John Warboys, who was a taxi driver that would drive around in his taxi. He would have a bottle of champagne in his taxi, which he'd spiked. And he would get somebody in his taxi and say to a young woman, "Oh, I've just been to the casino and won, you know, won £50,000. Would you like to have a drink with me? Would you like to celebrate with me?" And often the women would say, "Yeah, go on, and I'll have a glass of champagne with you, mate." I'd take a glass of champagne, and the next minute they'd wake up in the morning, very sore, feel like, "What happened? I can't remember getting home," and they'd been raped. And this man was one of the most prolific rapists in, you know, British history. And when somebody like him is arrested, obviously they pose a significant threat to the public. So they are immediately remanded in custody. But what you're seeing here is people who have kicked a police van, shouted at a police dog, someone who has merely, you know, I'm quoting precisely here from the paper, but gesticulated at the police. These people are also being immediately remanded in custody. At this point, you've got to say, well, something is deeply, deeply wrong here with the British justice system if you're immediately remanding people in custody for these kind of non-crimes. But then it gets actually worse, and you're thinking, well, how could it get worse? Well, they're actually freeing serious criminals, including people who were involved in murders, in order to free up prison space to allow these, you know, non-criminals to be remanded in custody. And that's what's happening to people who took place in this, as you call it, a commotion. I call it, you know, mild disorder. I mean, there were some people who did slightly, you know, committed slightly sort of more serious acts, but they were in, you know, a minority. But yeah, this is where we are. Then you go to the Notting Hill Carnival, and the Notting Hill Carnival is basically almost you know, a criminal event at this point. The amount of criminality that takes place at the Notting Hill Carnival is unbelievable. The amount of people arrested is unbelievable. And what makes the arrests even more unbelievable is these arrests are being made when the police are trying not to arrest people. So, and that sounds odd, but, you know, in a case like the Notting Hill Carnival, they, as in the police, do not want to arrest people. They're doing everything in their power not to arrest people. And I've seen footage. I've seen footage of, you know, police officers, female police officers being sexually assaulted, and, you know, male police officers just standing back and letting it go on, and everyone just sort of trying to laugh it off as, oh, well, he's just twerking with her. Oh, it's just part of the culture and fun of the day. And this all happens because really none of them have got the guts to actually go and make an arrest, because they know if they do make an arrest, what's going to happen is you're fundamentally going to have a riot on your hands. So nobody wants to be that arresting officer. And there's plenty of footage of the Notting Hill Carnival where people are openly using drugs, people are committing criminal acts, people are doing horrific things, and, you know, no one's really interested in arresting them, because they know if they do arrest them, you know, you could well end up with a riot that lasts several days on your hands. And that's how the Notting Hill Carnival's ended before. But fundamentally, you know, this year it ended with two people, sadly, tragically, losing their lives because of violence. But this event is a flagship event. It's an event which, you know, politicians, the police, the media all praise, talk it up. And it's exactly the proof, just, you know, just weeks after all these people were treated very harshly by the state for what were very minor offences, and the state was getting very upset, saying, oh, you know, using terms like two-tier policing undermines the police, you shouldn't be using terms like that, you know, it's very naughty of you and rude to use terms like two-tier policing, you know, there's no basis of fact in all this talk of two-tier policing. You know, they were very annoyed that people were using this term, but just, you know, a week or so after the term became popularized, you could see two-tier policing in all of its glory at the Notting Hill Carnival. And there was one bit of action, shall we call it, that really stuck out to me. Now, this one bit of action was, it was actually white, I think they were white, actually, white women that I saw doing this. They were using this banned substance called laughing gas, nitrous oxide. And basically, it's, you're not meant to be using this. It's a mixture of nitrogen and oxygen, this nitrous oxide. And basically, it's administered to women during pregnancy to relieve pain and to make them go lightheaded. So, or if you've got muscle cramps or something like that, if you're experiencing extreme muscle cramps or pain or fatigue, you know, it would be administered to you. And basically, people were there on the street, you know, using this and doing it with complete, you know, immunity. The police just walking on by, absolutely no intentions of actually stopping these people doing this, because fundamentally, they don't want the trouble. They don't want the hassle. So that's the norm. You know, you're walking down the street, you're doing this. And this is all on a day which is actually, and this will probably make you laugh, is billed as a family day. You know, they call the first day of the Notting Hill Carnival the family day. Well, you know, does that sound like the kind of family event that you'd want to take your children to? Is that the kind of family event that normal people would be like, oh, that sounds like a wonderful day out for all the family? We'll go there amongst the people using their nitrous oxide, and we'll traverse the, you know, the people being stabbed, etc., etc. But that is exactly the situation. That is exactly what happens at the Notting Hill Carnival, and it really is absolutely scandalous that the government allows this to keep going on. It funds it. It ensures that every year it gets, you know, a huge degree of praise. You know, it's pretty scandalous.
And the criminality is largely from a particular subset of the non-white population. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd say, obviously, you know, it takes place in London. As it takes place in London, it's heavily influenced, shall we say, by the Afro-Caribbean community. And, you know, I'd say that that does play some role in the natures of the crimes committed at that event. You know, obviously, Afro-Caribbeans seem to be quite overrepresented when it comes to certain types of crime. I'd say knife crime is certainly one of those. You know, their youths are, you know, are very, very sort of prolific with that that particular, you know, type of criminality.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have a lot of this type of stuff. There is a tradition in American university life. It's called spring break. So there's a in late March, early April, in the middle of the second, if you're on a semester system, usually sometime in the middle of the second semester. It once upon a time probably was called Easter break. I remember when I was in grade school, we had Easter vacation. That at some point that became spring vacation, but it was Easter vacation. So it's around that time of year. And there is a tradition of going to the beach on spring break. And so places like Florida get Florida or, you know, on the East Coast, Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, these places get massive influxes of college kids. And, you know, they'll also go to Mexico, places like Cancun in Mexico. There are certain locations that get the black spring break, where the traditional black colleges, where the black students will gravitate towards. And these places get absolutely ransacked, like, every year. And it's a big problem for them. But, you know, it's a type of thing you can't talk about, or you can only talk about euphemistically, because they're youths, they're college students. But everybody knows what's going on. And I'm just going to extend this a bit. So a lot of, you know, we have all these traditions. And in your country, in my country, we have a lot of traditions. County fairs, or, you know, May fairs, this Nottingham fair, does it go back for centuries? It might go back for centuries.
Notting Hill Carnival, it goes back to the 1970s is when it began. Okay. And basically, it's relatively recent thing. No. It's an event that's taken place since 1966. So it's a post-war. Okay. It's okay. A post-war thing. It's an annual Caribbean carnival. So it's built
Caribbean
around...
carnival. Oh, okay. All right, so it's not, yeah, not like it. Okay. I was making the point, we have traditions, affairs, and things like that. But with the changing demographics, sometimes they're not fun anymore. And, or, you know, other things like public transportation. In so many cities in the United States, 100 years ago, you had excellent public transportation, trolleys. Some cities had, you know, the subway systems in Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, Boston. And, you know, what's happened, and they used to be, you know, relatively clean and safe and efficient. And now people are afraid to take them because of the changing demographics. And it has a huge impact on society, but I'll just kick it back to you real fast.
I'm going to tell you a story. We might as well have, since we're here, we might as well have story time. Mark's story.
Yeah, let's have story time. As long as there's no drag queens.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com. Or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
And it has a huge impact on society, but I'll just kick it back to you real fast.
I'm going to tell you a story. We might as well have, since we're here, we might as well have story time. Mark's story.
Let's have story time. As long as there's no drag queens.
There is definitely no drag queens, and okay. I am certainly not a drag queen. So this is not drag queen story hour, but it is story time nonetheless. So let's hit it from the top. When I was a little boy, probably between the ages of about 4 till maybe about 10, 11, 12. I used to spend a lot of time at my grandparents' house. Now, my grandparents all come from a little village in Lincolnshire called Heckington. Now, Heckington has an annual event called the Heckington Show. And the Heckington Show is a traditional village show. And the Heckington Show is the longest running and largest event of its kind in the UK. And over the weekend, I'm going to get the actual correct figures. I'll see if I can actually find the correct figures for this, because it's important to do this. I wonder if there'll even be a Wikipedia page, you know, on the Heckington Show. It'd be funny if it isn't, because it's one of the few things that isn't on Wikipedia. It is the largest village show. I think around 24,000 people attend the event over the whole weekend. Even though it's just a small village, people come from far and wide, and it really is a wonderful event, and it's the kind of event that you would take your family to. It's absolutely fantastic. And when you go there, it's sort of a traditional village show. There's sort of fruit and vegetable stalls. There's competitions that children take in. The local schools have art competitions. There's photography competitions. There's local produce. You know, it's a farming community. So companies that make tractors will bring the latest tractors along with all the old tractors that they've been building since probably, you know, 1910 or something like that. And they put them all on display. There's people there, you know, in Viking attire, doing things like that. There's people in, you know, Second World War recreation outfits, showing off the weapons. There's rides, there's stalls, there's a big arena where there's show jumping. It really is absolutely fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. As I say, I think about 24,000 people attend the Heckington show every year. And I don't think there's a single crime that takes place. You know, at worst, there's a child that runs off and hides, and the parents will have to say, you know, can our child be found? And they'll find him, you know, sat hidden in a hedge somewhere eating his candy floss. You know, that's the long and short of the trouble at the event. And we were there. There's people of all ages. It's very homogenous, but there's people of all ages there. And it ends on the Saturday night. It ends with a fireworks display, live music. But people, you know, leave the event in an orderly fashion. There's no trouble. There's no one kicking off. There's no one drunk. Then it continues on into the Sunday. And because I loved it as a child, this year I said, you know what? I'm taking my daughter to this event. I'm taking Sophia, and I want to see if Sophia enjoys it like I used to love it. And she absolutely adored it. And on the Sunday afternoon before we went, she got very upset. She was like, Daddy, Daddy, I don't want to go. I've had such a wonderful weekend. Please, can we stay? And I'm like, we're not staying. We can't stay. It's coming to an end. You know, that's it. That's it, darling. We do have to go home. And she was very, very upset. She was crestfallen. You know, she just wanted to stay and she wanted to have more fun. And it was a lovely weekend. And I, like, as a dad, you know, was over the moon that she had so much fun. You know, I was over the moon that she'd enjoyed it as much as she had, and that it was all a big win, really, and that she'd gone away from this event having had the same sort of experience with it that I'd had as a child. So all in all, a good weekend. Now, you compare and contrast that kind of event with the Notting Hill Carnival, and it truly is night and day. You know, you would feel scared for your life taking your kids to the Notting Hill Carnival. The idea of Notting Hill Carnival having a family day in itself is bloody laughable, especially considering the sort of things going on there. And, you know, I talked a little bit about the things going on there, but this year they had a particular problem with people defecating outside people's houses, you know, and in public places. All really, really, you know, horrible, horrible stuff, to be honest. And all of this, it sort of flies in the face of the idea of it being, you know, a family event. It's absolutely not a family event. It's something that you would not want to take your children to. You know, if somebody said, well, where are you taking the kids to this weekend? And you said, oh, well, I think of Notting Hill Carnival. People would look at you as if you'd fallen off the face of the moon. And conversely, at the Heckington show, you feel absolutely safe to let your children sort of off the leash, so to speak. You know, if your daughter wants to go and have a look around, or, you know, not that a five-year-old would go looking around, my daughter's only young, but what I'm saying is, you know, you're not looking over your shoulder every 5 seconds. You don't feel, you know, if your child strays a little bit from your side, you don't feel the need to have sort of a meltdown over it, like, you know, you often would in a more sort of, how can we say it, a more urban environment. And I would say, if you compare and contrast the two, one is sort of a typical sort of, you know, ye old English fair, and the other is your modern day, you know, multiracial, multicultural, you know, built around another group of people and their ways rather than built around our ways, and it shows. And I personally wouldn't ever want to go to the Notting Hill Carnival. It doesn't have any draw to me. I couldn't understand why anyone would want to go to the Notting Hill Carnival, especially with the sort of threats posed and the, you know, the horrible things that take place there. But it does represent, for the establishment, you know, the pinnacle of
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it, contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org, T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Especially with the sort of threats posed and the, you know, the horrible things that take place there. But it does represent, for the establishment, you know, the pinnacle of modern, progressive, tolerant, multiracial, multicultural Britain. And I think that tells you something about the nature of the modern, you know, tolerant, multiracial, multicultural Britain, that is seen as, you know, the pinnacle of, you know, the way British society, British culture, if you like. But you compare it with something that I'm sure the BBC would describe as pale and stale and all those other things they use when they talk about our culture and our way of life. Well, I know, you know, for a fact, if I was choosing my day out, which I do, I know where I'm going. I'm going to the Heckington show. And I think nationalists and traditionalists, you know, and people who are genuinely conservative, and when I say conservative, I mean with a small c, not part of the horrible, you know, diverse and progressive Conservative Party, but conservative with a small c, you know, need to support those kind of events. You know, they need to go to those kind of events, keep them going, ensure that they don't die away, that people don't just forget them, don't just stop going to them. Because these events are absolutely wonderful events that are part of our culture. And, you know, when you compare and contrast them to these big multicultural events, you can see that there is a better way. And, you know, I know that people within the establishment would never, never admit to what I'm saying, but there is a much better way.
There's a much better way. So I've been traveling around a lot this summer. I've gone through a lot of places in Northeast, Midwest, the South of the United States. And I'll go through neighborhoods that are Well, sometimes I wind up in black neighborhoods, but I'll go through neighborhoods that were built 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago. And you can look at the architecture, you can look at the buildings, and they weren't built as slums. Sometimes they were built, you know, sometimes they're row houses, but they were built and, you know, well built. Sometimes you're talking about detached houses, often very nice houses. And whether or not a place is a dangerous slum or not today has really nothing to do with how it was built 100 years ago, 120 years ago. It has to do with who lives there. And, you know, there are places in Cleveland or in Detroit or other places that were built for, say, the managers of the factories that used to exist there. And, you know, these are two, three-story houses, maybe four or five bedrooms. But they've become slums, and they've become slums, and they're all broken down because you had the changing demographic. And, you know, it's not like I enjoy saying this, but what it comes down to is the propensity for violence, in particular among blacks, and that it can, I'm sure to an extent it can be reined in better and countered better than it is now. But you look at the impact that it's had on the United States; it's enormous. So we had all these cities that were built in the 1900s. 1800 or early, you know, in the 1800s, by the early 1900s, they had pretty reasonable, pretty advanced transportation systems, maybe subways, certainly trolleys. You had great infrastructure of housing. And then after World War One, there was what was called the Great Migration. And this was a migration of blacks from the rural South the cities of the North, and they, you know, wound up working in the auto factories in Michigan, and, you know, the Detroit area, the steel mills in Pittsburgh, the rubber plants in Cleveland, and meatpacking places, I guess, in Chicago, whatever. They went north, and changed the demographics of the city, and because of the crime. Then you had the next phenomenon, which was after the development of the automobile, really, where there was no longer necessarily a dependence on mass transportation, public transportation to get to work. Really, in the wake of World War II, then you had what was the white flight from the city. So in the wake of World War I, you had the blacks coming into the cities. In the wake of World War II, you had the whites moving to the suburbs with cars. You know, cars were readily available, and you had a housing stock that was new housing stock built out there, and so you had these bedroom communities. And it's completely reshaped the United States in a way that now public transportation, to the extent that exists in the cities, is dangerous, and that people in general, you know, the white people in general are living in suburbs, in lower density areas where public transportation really isn't viable. And then finally, what has it done to, say, long distance transportation? Well, if you're living in a country where regular people are living in cities and have public transportation, if you want to go from well, I'll use an example of Japan, because that's a country where people live like that. If you're going from Tokyo to Osaka, you get on your commuter train, you go to Tokyo Station, you get on a bullet train, you go to Osaka Station, and then get on another commuter train and go to your final destination. But if you're in the United States, because that first leg from your house to the main train to the potential bullet train hub, and that last leg, because those really don't exist, the bullet trains don't exist. And so everybody drives incredibly long distances. It's completely reshaped the geography, like the, what would you call it? Like the housing stock, the transportation, the road system, everything has really been reshaped by the fear of becoming victim to black crime. And that when you get down to it, the suburbanization of the United States and the dependence on cars as opposed to public transportation, when you get down to it, it's all about the avoidance of black crime. So with that, I'll kick it back to you, Mark.
Well, it's interesting what you say, and I was actually discussing this last night on another show, and I made a point which might be sort of controversial in sort of nationalist circles, but I don't think that black people are inherently criminal. Okay, I don't think they're inherently going to commit crime. However, I do think that when placed in situations such as, you know, urban environments, no jobs, endless benefit checks, rap music, glorifying, you know, the gangster lifestyle, I think they are essentially transformed into a situation or into a people who are then extremely likely to commit serious criminality, and much more likely to commit criminality than, you know, than whites in that like for like situation. And I think that, you know, black people are not thriving in these inner city areas. They're not thriving in the West. I think the same could be said for Aboriginals in Australia. If you see Aboriginals that still live as Aboriginals in their original tribes, they are not the same as the Aboriginals that you see, you know, drinking petrol. And that sounds like some kind of crazy stereotype, but if you look it up, you know, Aboriginals sadly have, you know, taken on this, you know, extreme form of alcoholism where they will drink petrol, you know, to basically carry on, you know, living it, you know, to live in the drunken stupor which they desire to live in, because they've fallen so far, they will actually drink petrol. Now, that sounds absolutely insane. That sounds like, you know, oh God, you know, that can't be true. It can't be true that people drink petrol, but it is true. It is true, and it does happen.
There are public service announcements in Aboriginal communities: don't drink petrol.
Yeah,
and also don't sleep in the street.
Yeah, and as I said, again, I don't think Aboriginals are inherently people that would drink petrol, and I don't think that black people would inherently walk around, you know, just stabbing or shooting people randomly and behaving like that. Because when you go to Africa and you look at traditional African tribes, they don't, there is a structure, there's a hierarchy, and there is peace. You know, they're not constantly just killing each other. It seems to be that when you take these people out of their natural environment and place them in a very unnatural environment that has, to a large degree, been tainted and shaped by Western liberalism, it is not good for those people. It is not good in the slightest. And, you know, it has to be said that fundamentally, I don't think Western liberalism is good for people in the West. I don't think it's good for us. But I certainly don't think Western liberalism has been good for people, for black people. I don't think bringing huge numbers of black people here, putting them in these urban environments, banging them on benefits, and basically saying, well, you know, knock yourself out, do as you wish, I don't think that's done wonders for the black community.
No. So there are different tendencies. You know, obviously you can have a short Swede and you can have a tall Vietnamese person, but on average the Swede's going to be taller than the Vietnamese person. And there are, with blacks there and whites there are tendencies. It's likely that the black is going to be more, it's going to be a little bit quicker to react violently in certain stressful situations or whatnot. There are things like that. I'm not going to go into great detail, but there are differences in psychological traits and different tendencies.
On average, they have a lower impulse control and they're quicker to anger.
On average. Okay. So, and then when you talk about groups, then the types of things that would need to be done to manage those impulses. If you had one community that was pure black, you'd probably have one set of rules or procedures or structure set up. And if it was pure white or pure something else, you'd have different structures that were set up. When you get them mixed together, then which structures are you going to use? And the ones maybe that are more constricting to the whites, or the ones that are more liberal to the blacks, or whatever, that can be difficult. And you see that very much in school systems. So when you have a lot of blacks and a lot of whites in the same class, there have been studies showing black boys will learn better if they're able to walk up and walk around the room in the middle of class. Well, that's okay, fine. But walking around the room in the middle of class is disruptive for the people who don't learn better that way. There's stuff like that. But one last thing, point I want to make is that in the United States, the issue of black crime, like I say, there was always this tendency, and whites had started leaving the cities not too long after the blacks started showing up in the cities, which started in large numbers in the wake of World War One. But it was really in the 1960s with the a lot of the programs that you're referring to by the blanket term Western liberalism, that it really picked up. And so if you're studying American political history, this is where in the 1968 election, you get Richard Nixon winning on a platform of fighting crime. Crime became a real big issue, and black crime had spiked very much in the decade of the 1960s. If you compare the, say, 1968 to 1948, 20 years earlier, which would be before, before the Civil Rights Movement also, which is, there's a psychological thing there, but also before the welfare state, the development of the welfare state, there wasn't nearly as much crime. The crime really exploded. You can look at the data. It really exploded in the 1960s. So you got those things. I'll kick it back to you. But by the way, I have been to Aboriginal areas of Australia. I've been to Alice Springs a couple of times, and it's really interesting and sad to see what's happened to the Aborigines.
I think different people are going to flourish in different environments. Not everyone's going to flourish in the same environment. And, we know that, from schooling, different children flourish in different environments. And it would be silly to suggest that we're all going to be placed in exactly the same place and all do the same things in that place and all be, all be just as happy as one another, in that environment, because we're not. But that's one of the problems with multiculturalism. There has to be societal, there has to be societal norms. There has to be ways for people to sort of rub along with each other. And there has to be situations where everybody, abides by the same rules. There has to be norms. A society is built on norms. You can't survive without them. And I believe that the societal norms that have been created in the West benefit white people. But they would, because we created this society. They don't necessarily benefit blacks, Aboriginals, or other groups. And based on that, to essentially place everybody in that position, it is not going to work, and it's not going to work out well for black people, but nor is it going to go well for white people who then live alongside those black people. The whole thing is going to be a mess. And then when you try to claim that, these sort of black people who are behaving in that way are somehow bringing a new level of culture and wondrousness to the West, and we should then embrace that, that is just obviously ridiculous. It's ridiculous, it's nonsensical, and the people saying it just sound absolutely idiotic, sound like fools. But in a nutshell, everything I've said is multiculturalism. That is multiculturalism. That is where we are. The multicultural West is, you know, the multicultural West has created a situation where this will continue happening, where, you know, the Notting Hill Carnival will continue to be, you know, the high point of, you know, our society. Well, why does it have to be that way? Well, it has to be that way because fundamentally they want it that way. It has to be that way because that is how they want it, and what they want they get. But that puts us at a massive disadvantage, even more so when you place it in the context of a two-tier system, because it would be bad enough if all of these things were happening, but we were all treated as equals under the law. That would be bad enough. So, you know, whites and blacks having to live together in this natural society where...
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Hey there, this is Sheila with Hempaste by Mynutra. Why is hempaste better than other CBD options on the market? It's important to point out that the common CBD oil does not contain CBDA or CBGA, and they're only found in fresh or raw hemp products, like hempaste. Hempaste contains the entire plant, minus any stems. This means the product retains the complete genetic code of the plant, which also includes those two vital cannabinoids, CBGA and CBDA. Over and over, experts keep saying the more intact or less processed the hemp plant is, the more effective it is. Happy hemp paste.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org. And visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Call 855-656-8872. Mention RBN.
A two-tier system. Because it would be bad enough if all of these things were happening, but we were all treated as equals under the law. That would be bad enough. So, you know, whites and blacks having to live together in this unnatural society where... you know, violence and other horrible actions take place more regularly, that would be bad enough. But for that all to happen under a two-tier, politically motivated, highly repressive system, which specifically targets white people that dare speak out against the nature of the system, you do end up then in a place where white people are absolutely disadvantaged far more than black people. And that creates then an entire, it's not just two-tier policing, you end up then with an entire system which you could rightfully describe as, how can I say it, a tiered citizenship. So you have first class and second class citizens, and white people are the de facto second class citizens in this society, sometimes further down the list, because there are often tier lists, aren't there? I've got to say, like, if there was a fight between, you know, a white man and a Polish migrant, a white Brit and a Polish migrant, the system would likely take the side of the Polish migrant. However, if the Polish migrant had a fight with a black man and things got a bit heated and the black man said racial language was used, the system would probably take, on balance, the black man's side over the Polish man's side. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously then, if you had a situation where you involve, say, a Jewish man and a black man, well, you know who's coming out better there, because one will be called anti-Semitic, and that's the ultimate thing that you can never be called, you know, because if you get called that, you know, your life's immediately in ruin, essentially. But, you know, that is society's modern tier list. And that's why multiculturalism is even more dangerous to white people than might immediately seem, because we are not equal under the law. Bad things happen more commonly in multicultural societies. So, you know, there's your first negative. But when one group is disadvantaged to the point they are not allowed to talk about the bad things, or sometimes even defend themselves against the bad things, that makes it all the more worse.
It reminds me of the Murdoch episode where the Asians, I guess really the Chinese, invade the United States and take it over. And Murdoch and Professor Murdoch are so happy because being a second class citizen is so much better than being a sixth class citizen. So, anyway,
I remember that episode. And in the end, the freedom fighters basically free the Murdochs, don't they? They come in and they're like, hey, we're here to save you. We've come back to free America and turn it back to the way it was. And they're like, no, it was so much better under the Chinese rule.
Yes. And then of course, Murdoch John was one of the freedom fighters. And the freedom fighters, their reward was that, I guess, that President Trump would give $6 gazillion to Israel in your name. So
I remember that episode. Everyone was a classic. But it's testament to how good that show was, just for the fact that you can actually that show will have had you howling in laughter, but then you can actually cite that show as a legitimate political influence for making an absolutely wonderful point whilst making you laugh at the same time.
Well, that's all we have time for today. So I want to thank you for joining me, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure. It's always a great way to start my week with you. I look forward to doing the same next week.
Okay, and I will be back again next time, tomorrow, with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these 5 easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your 5 easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our 5 easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because